You sure are, with two special guests tonight, John Zaffis, the Reverend Andrew Calder. More to come in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John, why are people interested in demonology, both in a profession like you or people who will call you next hour by the hundreds? Why do people seem to be so fascinated with this field?
Today, it's more open. People are more interested in knowing, do demons and devils exist? Do these negative things actually exist? Over the past couple of years, I've seen more people interested in the demonology end of this work than I've ever seen before. I think it's the fascination, the curiosity factor of trying to gain knowledge, trying to understand what these things are all about. We have more people coming to the forefront speaking about some of these negative situations that they're experiencing. They're not so petrified like they used to be of talking about it. So today, when talking about the demonology, it is something that people are very intrigued with, trying to learn and trying to understand the field of the demonology, the exorcist, the people involved with it. It's been so hidden and so secretive for so many years, but now those walls are broken down and more of the information is getting out there to be able to help people.
That's what it's all about too, Andrew. It must be very sobering for you after an exorcism, a successful one, or just anything that is involved with people who have been very upset, when you see some kind of resolution to this, huh?
Yes, very much so. I'd have to say you can see an immediate change in the person, immediate change in the environment. I mean, you feel love. You actually feel the presence of God, you know, within the homes, within the people. Also, kind of to cap on what John was saying there just a little bit, you know, these days, me and John used to get referred cases by, you know, the truckloads by other groups out there. When they come across a negative case.
Right, they didn't want anything to do with it, did they?
They didn't want anything to do with it. Now everybody and his brother, you know, is wanting to get into the demonology field, or got their own, you know, demonologist on their team when they have little or no experience in this area. And I think it's just the new fad right now of everybody wanting to jump on the bandwagon. And unfortunately, a lot of people are not prepared for this.
Are there dangers to the investigator if he or she doesn't know what they're doing?
Sure.
Look at that. What's the downside?
Well, the biggest thing most people don't realize is that they themselves can become a victim. They can suffer repercussions off of these cases. Their family can become a target. Their children can become a target. And a lot of times they just do not take that into consideration. They just think about what they want to do and not anything afterwards down the road.
They think it's fun.
Exactly.
It's not fun all the time, John Zaffis, is it?
No, unfortunately, today, George, it's at an epidemic. With watching people just throwing up a web page and opening up organizations and leaping in there with reading a little knowledge off of a website or from a book and going in there and starting to command the demons to come forward, commanding a lot of these different things that are occurring in some of these horrific cases where these people are being tormented. And these researchers are walking away in a situation where they have so much activity on a negative level happening within their lives. Some of them don't even realize how severe doing these types of things are until they actually experience it or go through it.
Awesome.
And today there's many researchers that are realizing that it's not a safe environment. It's not a good thing to go into an investigation not knowing whether you're dealing with human spirit or something on a negative level and to start challenging it just to be able to walk away with some evidence. It's an extremely dangerous thing. Unfortunately, people don't understand that on that negative level, these things are going to do everything they can to hide. Their secrecy is the most up importance to them. So therefore, once they do that, they are granting permission of free will for these negative entities to attract towards them, and they do take advantage of it.
Do you find that people are coming to you, John, saying, show me proof about the afterlife. Show me proof that ghosts exist. Show me proof that there are really demons. And then what do you say to them? How do you prove it?
Today we have so much evidence. I mean, you know, in the scientific approach of this with our EVPs, our psychic photography, being able to check the temperature changes and the video systems, they're phenomenal. And they're recording a tremendous amount of data. They're bringing the proof forward in a lot of these investigations. And a lot of this information today, we're fortunate, is out on the internet on the things that are occurring. Today, George, I find people will say to me, even hardcore skeptics, they'll go, John, don't necessarily believe that there's devils and demons out there, but there's something we just don't understand.
Andrew, what about you? How do you convince people that it's real?
Well, George, one thing I've found from doing this for a number of years is that, first of all, I can't convince the skeptics. Apparition could manifest right in front of the person, and they're still going to try to rationalize it, you know, find some real-world answer for it, which I can understand to some degree. But as John said, with all the technical evidence we have these days of recordings, you know, thermal recordings, you know, EVPs, infrared, these type things, things that we didn't have 20, 30 years ago, that this is some very compelling evidence. And I feel it's probably not too far down the road before we'll come across some technology that will kind of cross the boundary that will give us more rock-hard evidence telling people, like, okay, this was a ghost, okay, this was some kind of apparition. But right now, I typically don't really rely a lot upon the type gadgets and so forth.
Right.
Typically in working demonic cases, you're not going to get a lot of that technical type evidence, and I'm sure John can agree with that.
You don't believe in the EVP sounds that we hear, or do you?
Oh, I do. Okay. I do. You just have to understand that the demonic is an intelligent entities. They've been around for thousands of years. They know how to push our buttons. They know how we work. They're not going to just up and, you know, speak or cuss or do whatever, you know, in front of you, because that's kind of giving themselves away. So they're going to kind of hide. They're going to run from you, do these type of things. You will get evidence from time to time, but it's not very often.
Andrew, go ahead, John.
When we're talking about on a technical end of it and being able to prove things out, what the majority of us that have been in the field for years is noticing over the past 2 years, the EVPs are outstanding.
Yes.
They're coming out with sentences. They're coming out with names. I hear EVPs, not just within my own organization, but other people I intermingle with. It is actually frightening to sit back and listen to some of these things that people are recording and picking up. I mean, I never thought we would see the advancement, what is happening today with the communication as far as EVP comes. And it's just something where I sit back and I listen to it and I hear these different things that are coming forth. And some of this information is actually phenomenal with being able to help as far as our investigation goes.
And aren't those sounds of children so eerie, John?
It's a bone-chilling, George, when you hear a child. Or we go into some of these locations where there were, you know, mass murders of children in orphanages or asylums or something, and these children come through. It is still something, no matter how long I do this work, that is one thing I think that affects so many of us, and that's when you deal with a child or a child spirit.
What do you think, Andrew, this is? I mean, what is it, a different plane of existence, another dimension? What is this?
I feel that when we die, we still have a part of our free will that is not taken away from us just because we die. We have a choice of whether or not we want to move on to the light, as a lot of them call it, or we can stay here on the earth plane.
If we want to.
If we want to. Now, until the end time comes anyway. A lot of people believe, or especially in the Christian realm, they think, you know, once you die, you go immediately to heaven or hell. I don't necessarily believe in that. You know, I feel that's why many spirits are still here. They refuse to move on. Many of them don't know they're dead. You know, they died a very tragic death. You know, they're attached to a place, property, or possession.
So those movies where someone dies and someone comes down and says, okay, it's time to go now, that's not necessarily the case.
Not always, no.
All right. So with this choice, why are so many just hanging around? I mean, do they still think they're alive?
Some of them do. You have to understand, George, like just me or you, we're very attached to our physical possessions, our cars, our family, our houses. Just because somebody dies and leaves their body doesn't mean they're still not attached to their physical property, possessions, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And their loved ones.
And their loved ones, of course. So many times they choose to stay here. And then sometimes some of them don't know they're dead. They're moving around in their normal little lifespans, thinking that, you know, they can't understand why people's not communicating with them. I had a case up in South Carolina a few years ago where this family moved into a house that used to be a children's home. And before that, an elderly man had lived there, and they said that every morning about 6 o'clock in the morning, they would hear something like pans rattling in the kitchen, you know, sound like somebody making breakfast. And then about between 6:30, 7 o'clock, you'd hear the front door kind of open and close. Then there'd be no more activity all day long until about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Then they would hear something sound like the front door opening. And then, you know, there'd be things like fans turning on in the house and so forth. And the biggest thing we could attribute to was the elderly gentleman that used to live there, he got up in the morning time, left to go to work about 6 o'clock in the morning. Then he'd come home about 5 in the afternoon. And he was just continuing life as normal. We eventually was able to get him to cross over by just telling him, you're no longer alive. You need to cross on over to light. We asked for angelic assistance to, you know, help him move on. And apparently he moved on toward the light.
And it worked for them.
Right.
I mean, are there, I guess when someone dies, whether it's a friend, a loved one, or just a stranger, they may be standing right by us going, hello,
right.
Hello, and we don't notice them, do we?
And sometimes I think that's why the phenomenon happens, is they're trying to get your attention because they're trying to speak telepathically or whatever it may be, but it's just not working. So they're going like, okay, let me throw this off the table. Let me move this. Let me do that to try to get their attention.
I think these are so many of the areas, and even after so many years of me being involved with this, George, it's like, how do they have the ability to stay earthbound? Can they cross back and forth? Do they go to heaven? Do they go to hell? Why do they stay earthbound? Was it a tragedy? Was there unresolved business? Was there something wrong? And the other part of it also, too, is so many of us, we lose a loved one, and that grieving process that so many of us go through, is it a type of situation where we actually keep that energy or that soul or spirit earthbound
yes.
from our grieving process, and that intermingles with something else that is there, that's earthbound? These are so many of the questions and so many of the things that I think so many of us are searching for. Why do these things occur? Why do so many deceased relatives and friends come around a person that's near death and they go through these experiences? I've seen it happen several times. It's a beautiful thing to witness these things and watch these experiences that people have, and they try to understand them when a deceased loved one is trying to communicate something through them. That's something that I've strived for over the past several years, is when people do have these experiences, gee, grandma came back around, it was my mom or dad back around. What a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. What more could you ask for than someone you loved so much and comes back and tries to communicate with you?
How many people who have someone who passes on become obsessed with wanting to contact them, John?
Oh, go ahead, Andy. I'll let you handle this one first.
Okay. I just started to say there's probably more than we realize out there, and that's what attracts a lot of these spirits. You know, people, you know, a man's wife dies, and he is in so it's just like what John was saying. They're so grieving. They want one last contact, one last goodbye, some form of closure, that they're willing to do anything to get that contact. You know, say goodbye, I love you, whatever it may be. You know, they decide to whip out the Ouija board, or the or the friends do a seance or something like that. And unfortunately, there's spirits out there that are what I call opportunistic predators. They're willing to step in at a moment's notice and take advantage of this grieving person.
Because that person is so obsessed with trying to reach their loved one?
Exactly. And they'll listen to anything. They'll listen to anything that's told to them. And, of course, these things have knowledge of the ages. So, yes, they can mimic the voices of the people. They can pretend to be, you know, Ethel, the wife, or Fred, the husband, or whatever it may be, and give them little snippets of information, making them think that this is them, and thereby giving their free will permission, as John was saying, to let them enter into their homes or into their lives.
Tuesday, I had Dr. Raymond Moody on the program.
Oh,
and
yeah.
as much as he has investigated life after death experiences, he still isn't quite sure if it exists or not. He thinks it does, but he's still on the cusp a little bit. But he did tell us about an event that you can create. It's called a psychomantium. It's a room with a mirror,
right,
and you can communicate with the dead through it. And he's amazed by that.
It's been around. Powerful type situation, George. I've witnessed that several times. And here again, it's something with most forms of communication, I'm very guarded and I'm very careful on what can occur and what can happen in those situations. Like I said, I've witnessed it several times, and it's something to proceed with extreme caution when doing any type of situation like that.
And he was on Wednesday. I've lost my day because I worked on Sunday, so my days are screwed up. But what he said is that he even tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And voices came through. He heard them. Whether he hears them in his head or not, it's not the point. Is that not proof of life after death?
Well, here's something that I've learned to try to understand with constructive types of situations like this. We're trying to do studies. The more that we study these things and the more that we bring forward, we're trying to get the answers to the whole supernatural world, the more questions we have, the more that we try to understand certain types of things. When he's hearing the spirit voice, he is naturally saying to himself, okay, is this something that I'm creating within my mind and I'm hearing them, or is this something that's actually transpiring within that constructed area? We all do things like this because we always try to second guess what is happening and why it is happening. So that's a healthy way to look at things, and I look at things from that perspective also. Did Raymond really experience those voices, or was it something that was being created from the energy? Was it something that was within his mind? So here again, it's healthy to look at it from that perspective and to keep an open mind and to still progress with trying to understand some of these things. And as long as they're done within a constructive, experimental type thing and you have other people there to watch what's happening is something, to try and be able to prove some of these things out, was there a temperature change within the box? Were they doing EVPs? Were they trying to record these things?
Or all of the above. John, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. I'll tell you what, we'll open up Fast Blasts next. Okay, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, but I'll take Fast Blast questions for our guests, John Zaffis and Reverend Andrew Calder, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. John, we're going to go through some Fast Blast questions for you. One here from Alan in Schenectady, New York. What's your take on the Amityville Horror?
The Amityville Horror, I did not work on the investigation. Unfortunately, I was too young. And I had heard the audio tapes of Kathy and George Lutz of the investigation that Ed and Lorraine Warren had done prior to the books, prior to the movies. And I used to beep up at my aunt and uncle's house. He would say, listen to this, listen to this. Sat there for a couple hours, and he would just play them back and forth. And shortly after that, all the movies and the books came out, and there was a heck of a lot of Hollywood hype with them. I was very fortunate a few years back to meet George Lutz and actually lecture with him. In our downtime, sitting and talking to George or Lee, whichever name you prefer to call him by, and hours of conversations on things that transpired and the things that happened in that home, do I feel that the Amityville home had a haunting that did transpire in there? I absolutely do. The movies and the books, do I feel that that's all hyped? Absolutely.
But there's no question. The horror that occurred in that house could have been, turned into the horror of these demonic events that occurred.
Most definitely. Like I said, do I feel absolutely, without any doubt, that there was some type of haunting that Kathy and George experienced in the Amityville house? Absolutely.
Now, this one's for you, Andrew, from Tyler in Calgary. Is it possible that spirits can physically help people out of danger? When I was much younger, a fire started in my house while I was asleep. I somehow woke up after jumping down the entire staircase, landed on 2 feet. It was a strange experience. It could also have been an angelic experience, but can this happen?
Sure. I believe there's spirits out there that can help us out of dangerous positions. Dangerous situations, human and both angelic type spirits, I believe, that could, warn you of fires, impending type dangers and so forth. So that's very much possible.
Charlotte writes from Kansas City, Missouri, just as animals can see and hear that things that we can't, there are things we still can't see in the spirit world. Do you believe, John Zaffis, that some people are more resistant to spirits than others?
Absolutely. We have people that for somehow, I call them neutralizers. There's no spirit activity that occurs with them. They never experience anything on a paranormal level whatsoever. Then we have people that are more sensitive. They're more open. And these types of people experience more. Now, children experience the most. Women are the next to experience things. Guys, we have to get punched and knocked out before we believe anything exists. So therefore, yes, there are different categories that these things occur. Now, a key factor with the animals, their sixth sense, they use that throughout their entire lives to be able to help protect them. We are taught not to use that as we start to grow up, where our parents tell us ghosts don't exist, spirits don't exist, so therefore we are trained not to believe and exist that the existence of these things occur, boom, we're in our 20s and 30s, go through a haunting, and we have to reevaluate what we were told not to believe in.
Andrew, can spirits trick us, demons trick us, to make us think that there are departed loved ones?
Yes.
And then they come in through the portal.
Yes, I've worked a number of cases where demonic entities have took on the guise of a long-lost loved one or supposedly a spirit that died on a property in 1605 or whatever like that. And the people get caught up in these little scenarios and believing all this and eventually let their guard down and their free will in and allow these spirits to come into their lives and cause all kind of havoc.
Are there different kinds of exorcisms, Andrew? Steve from Nebraska wants to know.
Well, yes and no. There is cleansing of homes and properties, and then there's an exorcism of persons. And there's not really much difference. You still invoke the power of God and angels to do this with. Some just takes a little bit more than others.
You agree with that, John?
Absolutely. Usually an exorcism and a deliverance is reserved for people. Clearings and certain types of things are used on properties, and it's still the same type of thing where it's invoked upon by the higher powers to be.
Andrew Gillis from Mobile, Alabama. What is your most distressing spiritual entity that you have ever encountered in all your experiences, and why was it so disturbing?
I'm not going to name anything by name because, as John said, I'm not going to give it recognition or power. But in my early years, I worked a particular case with a particular lady over in Columbus, Georgia, that went through two exorcisms to get rid of this entity. And I had things where it would visit me in the night. I would be woken up, something tapping me on the forehead. I would have horrible nightmares, different manifestations in my home. And some of my family members also experiencing knockings, rappings, these type things. So I would have to say that's probably one of my most powerful ones that I've experienced in the past.
How about you, John Zaffis?
When you experience these things and these things come to the forefront, you do what you can not to give it any type of recognition whatsoever. And usually ever bringing up the names is something I will never do unless it's in the circumstances of an exorcism or deliverance. Otherwise, I never do. When you have visitations or you have things on a negative level, is it a frightening type thing? Absolutely, because you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen when you get involved with these exorcisms, and you know there's always going to be something that's going to occur afterwards, and you brace yourself for those types of circumstances.
Tell me a little bit more about things that occur when you get close to religious events. You had earlier said something to us about Ed Warren and a story about a monastery, how it affected him personally. You may have told me that last year, John.
I think you're referring to the experience that I just had this past weekend at a monastery. And I was there, you know, at a retreat with so many different people and everything. And it was Saturday evening. And I definitely believe that human spirit can and does communicate with us after they do leave.
Okay, so this is a new event then?
This is very recent. Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, my uncle has tried to communicate through several different people that are personal friends to get information to me because I always keep my guard up because I don't like to be tricked. Andy's aware of some of this because I've discussed some of this with him.
Sure.
My most recent event, being in this monastery, and the events and everything that transpired, I had gone up to bed. It was about 10:30. And my uncle was very notorious for always screaming my name out. He would go, "John, John, John." And I go, "What? What do you want?" You know. And he would always put his hand on my shoulder and squeeze it twice.
All right.
He was notorious for this. And so I heard my name. I went up into the cell. I kept hearing my name being yelled out. So I sat up and I said, "What do you want now? I want to go to sleep." So I didn't think too much of it. I went to go lay back down and I got the two squeezes on my shoulder. And I went, "Uh-oh, he's here." And how in the world could anything be tricking me inside a monastery, you know, to this point? So I'm thinking about it and everything, and I decided I was going to get dressed. I was going out into the gardens at this time of night and go sit up in the back and just think for a little bit. So I was walking along this cliff that looked down over the city, and as I was walking, I thought it was a monk that was alongside me, and I saw the face. I just saw the black robe, didn't think too much of it, and I, you know, just said, "Hey, Padre, how you doing?" And he was standing there towards me, and we were walking along, and he said, "Just always remember, I will always be with you." And I stopped, George, and I turned and looked, and I said, "What are you talking about?" And he was gone. He was totally, there was no one there, nothing whatsoever. I looked around the gardens. I'm looking to see if anybody's around. No one was there. So it was a very significant thing, I feel, that he was trying to get across to me at that point in time, because the morning he collapsed, I was with him, and he just got into this in-depth conversation with me, and he just kept telling me, no matter what happens, don't ever worry, because he always called me the kid.
Right, and he was ill, right?
No.
He was. Was this sudden?
This was sudden when my uncle collapsed.
All right, but I thought he had some problems before that.
Well, he had, you know, a couple of heart attacks.
Yeah, and, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, but he was not in bad health when he collapsed.
Okay. So
he actually, I can tell you, the week of, he was at doctors and things like that. So, but anyways, we were sitting there and having a conversation, and he just piped up and he says, you know what to do. I'm not always going to be around. And he says, I'll always be with you. Don't ever worry about anything. And I looked at him and I says, why are you talking like this? And that night he went down. And actually, I wrote this story up in 2005, and it's up on my website under stories.
And I've got a couple websites for you linked up. Which one do you recommend we go to for that?
You can go on to the www.prsne.com website under the stories.
Okay.
And this whole story is there about the day he collapsed. But it just, it takes you by surprise how these things occur, how they happen, and how beautiful is something like that, that you think about that, and it's a beautiful type situation, knowing that people you cared about, people you loved, are no longer with you, but yet they still try to communicate with you in many ways.
I love that. Mitch from way down under in New Zealand writes, I'm going to give this to you, Andrew.
Okay.
What do we know about lucid dreaming and the spirit world? Do they try to communicate with us that way?
Yes, they do, both the good and the bad, unfortunately. Many times in the spirit world or in the dream world, I believe this is one of the easiest methods for them to communicate with you. Most times it won't make a lot of sense when they're trying to communicate, but there will be some little tidbit of information they're trying to convey to you. It'll come forth in a dream, maybe in the middle of the dream, maybe something that seems a little odd. I know in my early years of working in paranormal investigations, particularly the negative ones, I had problems being attacked in my dream world by the negative entities. So, yes, spirits can convey information to you by lucid dreaming.
How do you protect yourself, Andrew, in a situation like that if you have some demonic spirits trying to get at you, even in your dream state?
I learned back many, many years ago that when I woke up from this situation was to not just ignore it and let it go away, to address the situation. I would command the spirit, whatever it was, to go away through the name of Jesus Christ, and I would bind it and forbid it to come back, these type things. And, you know, I would get, like, anointing oil, holy water out, stuff like this, and bless the room I was in. And typically after I'd done that, I would not have any more problems. But if I did not do these things, typically when I went back to sleep, the problem would start all over again.
This is for either one of you. Has anybody ever encountered possession of people by demonic animal spirits?
Well, that's referred to as lycanthropy. And in different cultures and different belief systems, they definitely believe that animal spirit can indeed enter, you know, a person's body. I've worked on three different cases, which we refer to as lycanthropy, and we do believe, you know, that these people fully 100% believe that it is animal spirit that's, you know, entering them. My belief system is that we're more than most likely dealing with something on a demonic level.
Yogrenda from Henderson, Nevada. What's in it for the demon? Why?
Oh, go ahead, Andy.
Well, you have to understand the demonic despise us because we are still in the grace of God. We're in the light. They will never, ever be in the grace of God again. They've been cast out. they cannot experience a lot of the joys we have in life, a lot of the physical things we're obsessed with. The only way they can do that is by physical possession to experience these type things. So that's what they have in it as far as possessing a person. Also, too, they get to eventually take the soul to hell.
What do you recommend people do to fight off these demonic spirits without, of course, consulting with a priest or anybody like that? Let's say they've got to do this on their own.
Probably 99.9% of the people I work with that come to me for help have little or no spiritual foundation whatsoever. They're kind of wandering around aimlessly out there. You know, they believe in God, they believe in Christ, but that's it at best. They don't practice their faith, or they believe, you know, there's one source, there's the ultimate source, or whatever you want to call it. But that's about as far as it goes. They have nothing to draw upon as far as a God, you know, anything of that nature. I recommend that they get involved in a religion, preferably a Christ-based religion, but I have to say in a divine, at least with a divine being, and practice their faith, develop a relationship with their God, with their belief systems, and therefore they can at least have something to fight with. Most of these people have nothing to fight with whatsoever.
This one's for you here, John. Glenn from Honolulu. Have you ever been on ghost tours, haunted tours, and what do you think of them?
Oh, I go on them no matter where I go.
You go for fun, or do you go for work?
I am very intrigued. I love going on all the ghost things. I spent a couple of weeks over in Hawaii, and I promised I wouldn't get involved with any investigations. Well, guess what? I ended up getting involved with things. So going on a lot of these different tours and different things, they can share some interesting information. They're fun to do, and a lot of times they can give you, you know, a lot of the history about the hauntings and the different things that took place in the buildings and within the cities and things. So I always recommend them to people.
How about you, Andrew? You go on them?
Yeah, I've been on them before. They're usually very good fun, a lot of history, a lot of information that you can find out about the cities or towns you may be in. You know, I think they're kind of harmless fun, so to speak.
Andrew, you talked a little bit about end times. You talked about, of course, what could very well be the apocalypse. Do you think we're in it now?
Well, the Bible says no man will know the hour or the day. And I believe that's true, but I do think we are experiencing some of the things because things have grown by monumental leaps and bounds in the negative world and the demonic world to give us some signs of the time. So I would have to say we're somewhere in there. We're in the beginning phases or the middle phases of it.
Of how long might this phase be? Years?
I would say it'd be years. It's not going to be anything that's going to be 1, 2, or 5 years. It's going to be long term.
All right, well, stay with us. John Zaffis, Reverend Andrew Calder. We're going to open up the phone lines now. Questions, perhaps stories you might want to share with us, demonic possessions, you name it. We've got the two experts here for you tonight. And their websites are both linked up at coasttocoastam.com, so take advantage of that as well, those of you who are computer savvy. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.